Today is April the 30th, 1984, and my name is Pat Slora, and you're...
Joe.
Okay, Joe, can we use this tape for just general purposes in AA, or do you just want it for historians or people that are researching anything? Does it matter?
Use it any way that you think it'll do anybody any good.
Okay. Could you tell us how you got to AA?
My original introduction to AA, my wife read an article in the Saturday Evening Post. I can't think of the name of the author.
Jack Alexander.
And I read that secretly. I didn't tell her I read it. I acted like I was sort of resentful. But I did read it. And then later on, I had a position with our county where I had charge of the mechanics of people being committed to the insane asylum. And a group came in to see me one day and told me that they were the committee from Alcoholics Anonymous, and they would like to make some arrangements to send their people, if necessary, to the Alton State Hospital, which was the hospital for mental cases. So we went up to the hospital. I was about 20 miles away. I went with this committee, and the doctor was very, very cooperative and was interested in alcoholism, fortunately. So I would say we had a rehab place there in Alton before anybody ever heard of these rehab places. And we would send the alcoholics up. We would, first of all, try to get them to go voluntarily, and it was very interesting that most of them went voluntarily to the state insane asylum. And they had, eventually, we had a AA unit up there, and everybody, not only people that we had sent there, but any patient in the hospital that the hospital authority thought might need it, maybe had a touch of alcohol, or they could go to this meeting, and it was still going on as far as I know. So that was my, and then I began to think about this AA and what they were doing, and it occurred to me that I could use a little of it myself. And we had two members. I wasn't in at the time, but at the time there were two members of AA, very active members, who were saloon keepers. I knew both of them, naturally. And I was in the saloon one night, at closing time, Saturday night, and the owner and the bartender, he was tending bar, and I were discussing, and I don't remember, but I might have cried a little on his shoulder, told him my problems. He said, "I'm going to pick you up Monday night and take you to a meeting." I said, "I'm ready." And then I didn't have a drink then, Sunday or Monday. He picked me up about 7 o'clock, and I went to my first AA meeting. And not exactly to my surprise, but it was rather interesting that we arrived at the meeting. It was in a hall, and there was a room at the side. He said, "You have to go in there." I said, "All right," so I went in there. I was in the room where prospective members were meeting, and we had to spend 30 days. We couldn't get in the main hall and be members of Alcoholics Anonymous for at least 30 days. We had 30 days of education, or whatever you might want to call it, to see whether we'd find out whether we would be accessible. And for these 30 days, everybody, all of us in there, wondered if we would be accepted and hoped that we would. And finally came the day, and it was a big day, and it was really quite a good feeling to be accepted. And from then on, that was my first meeting. And
what date was that?
members in 1945, I guess. I don't remember the exact date.
That's okay.
My card here says 3/12/47. But we had to be in a year before we could get this card. So I was in the admittance room, so to speak, for at least 30 days before I got into the big room. And we felt just a little bit exclusive, I suppose you might call it, being a member of AA. But we were all missionaries in a sense too. We spent time and worked very hard at acquiring new members. For instance, in the meeting, they would say, "Are there any prospects tonight?" I might get up and say, "Yes, I've got a fellow that might be interested in this." I said, "Well, so get him." We'd leave the meeting, take another fellow with him, go to the meeting, go call him this fellow. Or if we had an AA call, we would, when the student meeting started, first order of business would always take care of any prospects we might have. And if we'd had a call, we would go right from the meeting. We also called the roll, not by name, but by first name or whatever it was. And if so-and-so wasn't there, we'd get on the telephone, find out at home if he was ill or what. And his wife might say, "Well, he's here, but he's had a drink." Bam, we go right out to see him. Somebody in the committee would go to see him. So it was pretty hard. It was awful hard to get out of AA in those days. You didn't
hard
just,
to get in and hard to
yeah,
get out.
Yeah, you didn't just quit going to meetings or anything. You had to shun those guys that were on your back to get back in the meeting.
Well, did you have to submit anything to the committee?
Oh, yes, yes. We had to have a written committee, document of our life's history. We had to write our drunk log out, write it and sign it, have it passed on by the committee. That was part of the admittance. Of course, if you couldn't write it, I suppose there would have been a way that I don't recall anything but sense of that. We had a telephone. It's funny, too, how you can get off on a tangent, but we spent more time on a telephone, not talking on the phone, but deciding whether we should have a telephone. At some meeting, somebody proposed that we should have a telephone. Then somebody objected, and we would devote at least a half an hour, and it got very serious whether we should have it. It was like changing the name of Arkansas. Should we have a phone or should we not have a phone? So we finally got a phone. I think we got a pay phone. And then we had a hard time getting a payphone. To get a payphone in those days, you had to submit that you would spend so much money on it, or they wouldn't give it to you. So we finally got the phone. And the name of our organization was the Dr. Bob Group. They started before I was a member. The AA had been introduced to St. Louis by some people from Chicago. And some St. Louis people invited these East St. Louis people, one of them being one of the bartenders, saloonkeepers, over to a meeting in St. Louis. And then they started the meeting in East St. Louis. That was the Dr. Bob Group. And that group began to grow, and when we would get 20 members, we would get separate. We never wanted more than 10 members of a group.
Oh.
Felt that the discussion was easier and better, and I still think it is.
Yeah.
Everybody got to say their piece. And then later on, we had some new groups started by people who thought they were not given the proper respect. You know, there's always one like that in every meeting. We didn't pay enough attention, didn't do exactly the way he wanted to do. He started a mass meeting of his own. And maybe we had two or three of those kind of groups, which was all right, it was all AA. And then things got kind of bad in East St. Louis, and I didn't mean AA got bad, but the town began to kind of fall apart, and we rented a little place in Belleville and met there still the Dr. Bob group. And we met there for several years. Then, through the influence of some people from Belleville and East St. Louis adjoining towns, the Belleville people used to come to our meeting in East St. Louis. They wanted to start a meeting in another group meeting in Belleville. And they obtained permission and cooperation from St. Elizabeth Hospital. And our meeting was right there in the hospital, Dr. Bob group. And we would have maybe three or four patients from the hospital every Monday night. It was our meeting night. And the last time I was there, I thought it was getting a little big. But still, I wouldn't have an objection to it, because it was an excellent place to have a meeting.
When did you meet Father Ann, Dowling?
Oh, yes, I met him, and he came over to our group to make a talk a time or two, I bet. And, of course, I had been in Jesuit school all my college life. I'd spent 7 years in different Jesuit boarding schools and public schools like St. Louis University, for instance. And they were all run by the Jesuits. I knew a lot of the Jesuits, the Dowling knew them. We became very good friends. And then they opened a club in St. Louis called the 4522 Club. And it's been very successful, and I joined that. That's just across the river from where I lived. I joined that group over there. And they must have had, I don't know how many groups met there, that they just paid rent, and then they had a central sort of a gathering room, I'd call it, and served coffee there, served meals, they served lunches. Once in a while they'd occasionally have a dinner. And I've always heard that those social clubs didn't work too well with AA, but this one was very successful. And my wife and I would go over there. We had the card club, for instance. We played bridge once a week. And just a delightful time with real nice people. And it's still going. I remained a member and paid my dues up until about 2 years ago. And it's got so up in our area that we don't go out of the house after dark. Especially to go across the river to St. Louis, and crazy won't get home. So I dropped my membership over there, but I enjoyed it very much. And they had a group of clergymen that met in St. Louis. They had a group of lawyers that met there. So you could pick out if you felt that you maybe were a little bit too good to go to the meeting with the common herd, and sometimes people feel that before they come in, they say, well, they're all drunks, I can't go to a meeting with those kind of people. You can go to the meeting if you're a minister, with other ministers, or other lawyers, if you're a lawyer.
Is there still that same group, Dr. Bob's group?
Is our group in Belleville is.
Do they still have the room for the new people?
No. Well, we did away with that. I would say we did away with that when we moved from our original. We didn't have a room for it. We just had one room when we left the original meeting hall. We just had one room. And we dropped the writing of your history. And
do you remember what year that was?
I'd say it was probably around 19. 50, early 50s, and we dropped, we never had any, never questioned anybody's, not application, but anybody wanted to
their
come
credentials.
In.
Their
credentials.
Yeah. Well, when did they quit giving the gold card like you've got? Was that around 1950?
No, we still give that.
You still give those? And do they still put the stars on them and everything?
Yes. See, I don't have all of them on here.
Right.
You
couldn't get in
them all. I've got the stars. That's right, but many of them fell off, and it just wasn't room so fine. I said, well, there's no stars on there.
Well, now your sponsors, did they assign those sponsors, or did you pick them, or did they pick you, or how was that done? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I think maybe I picked them. I'm not sure. They're all dead, incidentally. I'm the only survivor of the Dr. Bob group, the original Dr.
Yeah.
Bob group, and these fellows are all.
Did most of them die sober, do you know?
Wait a minute, I'll take it back. John Blaney, the first sponsor, is still alive, but he has moved to another town. He moved away about 10 years ago. He was quite a character. Just one of a grand old fella, but he used to get drunk and get in trouble all the time. He was all cut up, and he had a family at one time, and everything got confused and mixed up, and he'd be the last person in the world you'd ever think that would be interested in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was in before I was. He was a very good friend of mine. Well, they all were, as far as that's concerned.
Didn't stay sober then, or he?
Oh, yes,
he did.
And he's still sober.
Oh, good. Well, what was the success rate? Was it pretty high then, or what? Was it about like it is now, or?
I think the success was high. Not the slips were high.
Right.
The success
but they
the,
stayed sober.
Well,
they wouldn't leave you alone. I guess you didn't have any choice but to stay sober.
Yeah.
He'd come out to your house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we had, East St. Louis was a working man's town in those days. And what do they call it? Blue collar.
Uh-huh.
And that's what it was mainly. We didn't have too much success with professional people or business people. They would come in and first thing they'd want was their anonymity protected. And as soon as they began to worry about their anonymity, it got so I began to worry about their sobriety.
Yeah.
It looked to me like the beginnings of that thinking where maybe I'm not an alcoholic. And they said, I don't. I lost my anonymity, as you heard me say. I'd been in about maybe a year, and they had an annual, a big meeting of the area.
Mm-hmm.
People from St. Louis and all over the area. And they had it in the ballroom of the local hotel, and there must have been a couple hundred people there. And I was the chairman. And somebody had invited, our newspaper reporter had called somebody and asked if he could come to the meeting. The guy said, sure, anybody can go to the meeting. So he did. And the Sunday paper, this was on Saturday night, and the Sunday paper, or the Monday paper, so-and-so chairs AA meeting, that was me, they named me. So
yeah.
My anonymity was...
Did you save that newspaper clipping?
Yes, but I haven't seen it in a long time. I don't know.
Oh, I'd love to have a copy of that.
Yeah.
That would really
be I'll look for it next summer.
Yeah.
I may have some publicity that I've always been a newspaper saver.
Me too.
Clipper.
Yeah.
I clip everything. Not even now, I got a file this thick. About once a year, I go through it.
In the archives, they have the early newspaper clippings. And they have pictures with black masks on of alcoholics. They would be very melodramatic about it.
I have seen. Well,
and it's
that
called
was
Bill the Water Wagon Head. It's a water wagon head visits here.
Uh-huh. Well, that was the way it was when I went in. I don't know just how it was considered. But nobody wanted to brag much about being an AA.
Yeah.
I remember one night when I was still drinking, meeting a guy that was a guy in the saloon. I didn't know him, but he's sitting there crying, and he said he was a member of AA. And I thought, well, what the hell kind of a outfit is that? This guy says he's a member of AA, and he's sitting there drunker than a goose. But later on, I found out how that happened. That doesn't happen to you. But the first thing AA who has slipped wants to talk about is his former conduct in AA. They never make a good drinker.
Yeah.
I've seen them, you know.
All right. Ruins your drinking, huh?
Yeah. Oh, sure does.
What about Father Ed? What were your impressions of him? Bill talked about his the way he looked, that when he first met him, he thought he was a bum, that he had his hat looked like a smashed cabbage leaf or something,
yeah,
you know. And
he was heavy, and his clothes were always crumpled, and he had a cane.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know whether he had arthritis. I have known. I mean, acted like or looked like he might have had arthritis. And I'd heard it said, I never heard him say it, but I've heard some of his friends say that he suffered a great deal. But he was very sincere. And he used to say that he was instrumental. I think I told you one time, I thought he used to say he wrote that article about religion in the book, but at least he worked on it. He used to go up to New York for their meetings.
Well, he did. There is
not, well, I had not in my time, but before, in the early days.
There is an article in AA Comes of Age by him, an address that he gave at the St. Louis Convention.
Is
in there, uh-huh, by Father Ed, yeah.
I missed that St. Louis Convention for some reason. I don't know what it was.
Bill talked about his eyes being so unusual.
Father
Ed's, uh-huh. He said he had the most wonderful eyes.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
He gave Bill a lot of strength.
I believe you're right. Sort of a piercing eye.
Yes.
You know, when you're looking at you, you noticed it.
Yeah.
That comes back to me now.
Yeah.
But, he wasn't, intolerant, you know, he was very tolerant. He appreciated it.
I liked what he said about the alcoholic taking the negative route to salvation, and that he said, I have a feeling if I ever find myself in heaven, it will be from backing away from hell.
Yeah. And he would talk to anybody. I used to send people over to him that were having problems that I couldn't help them with, you know.
Uh-huh.
And he'd do a bang-up job. He could sit down and talk to you for 5 minutes and know you better than you knew yourself.
Yeah.
Of course, that was his training, that Jesuit training, you know. It was very thorough.
Yeah.
I just wrote a letter to a Jesuit that I know. Celebrating his 60th anniversary this year as a Jesuit.
Wow. How old was he when he went into it?
Well, I don't know, but you got to spend 16 years after you get out of high school and college and their preparatory school.
Mm.
So I would think you'd have to be at least in the 30s to be a Jesuit. And I graduated from college 60 years ago this year. And I had a lot of training for AA in college days.
You qualified.
In the bootlegging days.
Yeah.
I don't know how anybody survived that prohibition era without being an alcoholic. You did it out of contrariness. Just didn't want anybody to tell you couldn't have a drink. So everybody,
right.
Watch everybody. everybody didn't drink, but it always seemed to me that everybody should, just to let the world know that you were not being imposed upon by the government or anybody else.
Right. Yeah.
At least that was a great excuse.
Right, I was going to say that. That feels like a good excuse. Well, getting back to your group, how did they celebrate the anniversaries when anybody had an anniversary?
They didn't have any.
They didn't. Did they have white chips
yes,
or anything?
Just like
they did.
We had chips and niggers after a year. Yeah, after 30 days, we had a model.
Oh.
Somebody started down that probably the university.
How did they start the meetings and end them? Did they start with the Serenity Prayer and read from the fifth chapter and then close with the Lord's Prayer, or did they have a different way of doing it?
Just like they do here, except we open with the same as like the card says. But we went around the circle with number one, I read that, then I passed it to the next one.
Oh.
And that, I think that's probably a good idea because it's a bashful person or something that kind of introduces them to opening their mouth.
Right, yeah.
Lots of you've seen people in a meeting. I have to sit there for meeting after meeting and never say a word. They're just in there. They're not good members of AA, but they're just sort of bashful and it's hard for them to speak. I've never done it in their life.
Right.
Like the guy said today, he didn't expect anybody to even speak to him.
Yeah.
And then we close with the Lord's Prayer. In some meetings they joined hands and others they didn't.
Right.
And I don't know whether I'm for that or not. It doesn't make any difference to me. I think for some people it's good. For other people it isn't. Now I know people who are kind of scrupulous about their health. I know a girl who got it. Somebody wants to shake hands with her, she couldn't even die.
Oh my. Yeah.
The health's not.
Yeah. Were there mostly open meetings or mostly closed meetings?
Mostly closed.
Yeah.
We had an open meeting and a banquet once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd have somebody like Father Dolan, somebody like that make the talk.
Did you go to any of the big conventions?
I remember going to a big meeting in St. Louis. I think it was a convention, part of the convention. We had some people who were very enthusiastic about the big state organization. And I think the one reason it was they got some recognition.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very important to some people, you know.
I remember we had
a serious situation one night in the meeting. We had a fellow who went to all of the state things, you know. He was the local representative, what did they call him?
The GSR?
Yeah.
General Service Representative?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he'd go to these meetings in Decatur and Peoria. I went to a few of them in other towns. And he'd come back and he'd give us a report. And I remember one night he gave a report and he went on for about an hour. Some guy got up and he said, "Well, I object." He said, "John has been talking for an hour." He said, "What the hell do we care what happens in Decatur?" He said, I felt so sorry for this poor guy. He was one of those nice people, you know, so sincere about AA and everything else in life. And he was crushed.
Yeah.
But it's one thing about these meetings, you get a cross section of life.
Right.
I don't know of any place in the world where you get every type of character there is.
Right.
And here we're all equal.
Right. Oh yeah.
We're all naked. We expose ourselves.
Alcohol is a great leveler,
yes,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Can you think of any funny incidents that happened in connection with being in AA?
I'll think of 100 of them after you and I part and I'm halfway home.
Well, I'll leave the, you know, we can turn the tape off and I'll leave this with you. And if you think of anything else that you would like to add to it, then we can add it onto the tape.
I've had some things happen to me that would disturb a lot of people about my anonymity. I went to a state bar meeting in Chicago one time. All the important folks of the country around there, we all got up early. And somebody said, we ought to have a before breakfast meeting. And my friend from East St. Louis that I had ridden up there with in the automobile, well, I'm ready. Said, Fleming won't go with us, though. He said, he belongs to that AA thing. See, he don't drink.
Oh, boy. Yeah. What did you say?
I said, that's right. I don't know. Another time I had a job in Chicago. I worked there for a while. And every evening at 4 o'clock, they would all, they were only about 8 or 10 people in the office. They'd all rush out to get a drink. And I was there 3 or 4 days, and they said, Fleming, come on, go with us, have a drink. I said, oh, I don't drink. Oh, they said, come on, hell, have a soda water. I said, no, I don't drink. I said, hell, I belong to AA. I got nobody speaking in that place. I don't know. They just wondered what kind of an animal AA person might be. That was back in the early days when they...
Yeah.
AA was the joke in the burlesque shows in those days.
Yeah?
Oh, yes, there was a lot of... you still hear a joke once in a while about AA.
Yeah.
Not like it used to be, though.
Yeah.
But it's no disgrace anymore. It's like insanity, you know. I can remember when it was... If a member of your family had mental trouble or something, you'd do everything in the world to keep from it being known publicly. Find some place in another state to send them to an institution. Nowadays, it's just recognized like alcoholism is another disease.
Yeah.
Which is to the better, I think.
Oh, yes, definitely.
I remember when I was a kid, there was a family lived on the farm near us, about 50 miles. Had a daughter who was insane, and they just kept her locked up in the room, had a room call. And she would scream, they said, oh, it was awful. But nobody knew that she was insane.
I say the biggest problem now with AA is keeping the social climbers out.
Yes, I can believe that. I can believe that. But I found this too. Like I said, I get this all the publicity in the newspaper about the sharing this. That was some great 12-step work experience on my part. I mean, man, I'm getting, to this day, I still get calls and say, hey, you belong to the AA. How about getting my husband in there, you know, or my wife sometimes?
Yeah.
Oh, I think you can't describe it at all. Words, I don't have any words to describe it. I don't work at it maybe as hard as I should, but I got number one. It's me. I got to watch me. Did I read this for the record? I want
to
go back to our original. Here's another thing. Now, this is my card. It's got stars on it, the name of three sponsors, and the date 3/12/1947, which I had to be sober a year to get. But at the top, it says AA Club in big letters, and underneath is written in printed letters, quote, I solemnly promise my fellow members that I shall, before committing any act detrimental to our mutual cause, write my reasons and report the results. Period. End of quote. Can you imagine anybody in this group doing a thing like that?
No.
And we used to follow that.
Yeah.
If you had a slip, you had to make a report before you get back in.
Well, I heard a fellow that had about 35 years say that he called his sponsor from a bar because he had gone back to his favorite bar to eat. That he knew that they served things because when he was throwing up in the bathroom, he smelled stuff cooking. So he went back there to have lunch, and his bartender said he hadn't seen him in a while, and he told him, well, he joined AA. And so his bartender said, what are you doing that for? Why would you do that? You don't have a problem with drinking. He said, I don't. And he said, no, we've missed you in here. So he went and called his sponsor. He said, I'm very sorry that I took up all your time, but I was flying under false colors. I'm not really an alcoholic. And his sponsor said, well, who told you that? And he said, my bartender. And he said, where are you now? And he said he was in a phone booth. He said, well, now you wait a minute, because he said he was resigning from AA. He said, I've got to bring you the paper to sign. If you're gonna go out, you know, leave AA, you got to sign the paper first. He said, you wait there, I'll bring the paper right down. Of course, his sponsor, you know, got hold of him and said, what in the hell do you think you're doing?
I had the opposite reaction. I had been in AA a year or two, and I was at a party one night. My favorite saloon keeper was there. He was a friend of mine, a lifelong friend. And somebody, and of course everybody knows, they say, you don't drink, what the hell happened to you? The truth of the matter is, when I was growing up as a kid in high school, if you were out and they were drinking, you didn't take a drink, you were supposed to have a veneer with you. Everybody said, oh.
Is that a fact?
Yes.
Oh,
that was the only reason that you wouldn't take a drink. But at this party, they were putting Eddie and I on, and said, Eddie, how you sure lost a good customer when this guy quit drinking. He said, that's the best thing that ever happened to my saloon. He said, that SB used to come in there and cause more damn trouble, get a fight started. He said, geez, I'm tickling down. He said, I hope he stays in that AA forever.
Oh, boy, that's funny. Well, can you think of anything else here?
Looks like we've covered this pretty well.